we have seen a new approach to the use of sanctions with respect to South Sudan in recent years. And what I mean by a new approach is that the United States government in particular has used sanctions authorities that they now have that perhaps they didn't have years ago, such as the Global Magnitsky Sanctions Authority, to really target the corruption that is in many ways fueling the conflict. You know, my organization very much feels that the political and other challenges that South Sudan is currently facing is a result of an attempt by elites in the country to obtain power in order to personally enrich themselves through state capture, through the misappropriation of state assets and exploitation of the illicit exploitation of natural resources in the country. And so what we've seen, I think, is a strategy in which the United States has used targeted financial sanctions against specific actors in the country in combination with anti-money laundering measures, right? Because there is a convergence between sanctions issues in South Sudan and financial crime. And so you see anti-money laundering measures issued by the United States Treasury Department focused on South Sudan. You see targeted financial sanctions. And I think, you know, if we don't start to see real systemic change and a real change in dynamic between the government, the opposition, and all of those who have a responsibility to produce and deliver meaningful change such that the resources of South Sudan actually go towards serving the country's people and go towards actually building a society that everyone can reap the rewards from, then I think you're going to see even more of an escalation in these sanctions measures and in these anti-money laundering measures. And I think that's where you'll see impact. You know, one of the findings in this report was that so far sanctions in the different countries that were looked at haven't been necessarily expansive enough in order to deliver a profound difference. But what I would say is when it comes to South Sudan, my view is that if we don't start to see real change and a real commitment on the part of power brokers on all sides, we're going to see enhanced sanctions impact, because we're going to see, I think, an enhanced use of sanctions to target these individuals.
Is there any overall recommendations for what you have seen?
Yes. So the recommendations are for sanctions, when they're deployed, to first be targeted in nature, to be network in approach. So not just going after, not just sanctioning the primary individuals themselves, but the money men, financial facilitators, commercial enablers, both not just in the country but around the world, that are responsible for allowing the sanctions target to be able to connect to the international financial system. We also recommend that when sanctions are imposed, there's a clear explanation of why and a clear explanation of how sanctions can be lifted if a change in behavior is demonstrated. So if someone is no longer responsible for engaging in the action for which they were sanctioned, there should be a clear explanation of how those sanctions can be lifted. And finally, sanctions, you know, are most effective when they're multilateral in approach. So certainly the U.S. dollar plays an important role in the international financial system, but when sanctions can be effectuated and replicated by the European Union, Australia, Canada, and ideally the United Nations, to the extent that that's politically feasible, then that's where they have the most impact. That's where they're most effective. And so those are some of the core recommendations that this report makes.
Yes, that was exactly one thing that I wanted to also ask. Just like a sanction can be in place, for example, in South Sudan, and then South Sudan will then use other countries, for instance, China or Russia, to breach the sanction. Thus far, the sanction cannot have impact at all or have slow impact on a country. So is there any an alternative that you can suggest if a country is sanctioned and it is trying then to use an alternative? What then can be done?
I think there should be a distinction made between a country that is sanctioned. So, for example, North Korea, Iran, Cuba, at least Cuba sanctioned by the U.S. I think that there is a distinction to be made between sanctions that are targeted against a country and a regime in a country and individuals within a country. And so when it comes to individuals who have been sanctioned by the United States and the European Union, we haven't really seen too much use of alternative avenues such as Russia and China, because the fact of the matter is the renminbi and the ruble are still extremely difficult to use. When sanctions are aimed at a regime like North Korea or Iran, or, you know, in the case of U.S. sanctions, Cuba, there are not very many avenues for alternatives in accessing the international financial system, which is why you've largely seen those countries as a whole cut off from being able to do business, you know, largely with huge swaths of the international banking system. When it comes to individuals who have been sanctioned, still not very many alternatives. I mean, could someone transact, as long as they weren't going through a U.S. financial institution or foreign financial institution that relied on U.S. correspondent relationships with in euros or in renminbi or rubles? Sure. However, the U.S. dollar is the reserve currency globally and overwhelmingly is relied on in order to make purchases and engage in financial transactions, even if the individuals involved in that transaction aren't located in the United States or have any affiliation or involvement in the United States. So that's why I think we see sanctions turn to as a key tool for policy advancement and for responding to conflict and crises, because it does have an impact. It does cut off the intended target off from the international financial system. And there are very, very few alternatives when someone has been sanctioned for moving your money overseas. Oftentimes, we've seen people talk about whether sanctions have been effective or impactful in other parts of the world, or, you know, at a high level. This was really the first time that someone took the opportunity to look at sanctions specifically with respect to sub-Saharan Africa. And I'm really proud of the hard work of the team in drilling down on Africa, sub-Saharan Africa in particular, because certainly it's an area of the world that deserves this kind of important attention.